I'm going to talk to you today about a population that is termed multi-problem youth. How many of you are familiar with this population, multi-problem youth? Well, you know, I'm going to let you know that you probably think that you're not familiar with this population, but you probably are. So I'm going to bring that to your attention. My dissertation study, I graduated last year from the College of William and Mary, was looking at issues of youth in foster care that were transitioning out of the system to adulthood, whatever that may be. Some of what I'm going to speak to you about today actually integrate some of the things that you heard earlier from the two other speakers. So I'm going to kind of put that into play for you. I specifically am coming out of the state of North Carolina. Any Southerners here? Okay, a couple of Southerners. North Carolina, we're using as a representative of the South. Now, the rest of the country knows that there's a particular character to the South. Is that correct? Can you all pretty much agree with that? There's some stereotypes that we have about the South. We have the stereotype that it's the Bible Belt. Can anybody agree with that? Okay. We can agree perhaps to the fact that the South is considered rural for the most part. A New Yorker coming to North Carolina, I can tell you that the transportation system is unique. Okay, it's not like we have here in the District of Columbia and surrounding areas. It's really very, very limited. And so I'm using North Carolina as a representative for nine states in the South, those states being North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Virginia. We don't include Northern Virginia when we're speaking about Virginia. I mentioned Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Okay. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the study that we're currently engaging in. As I said, I currently live in North Carolina. I work for NDRI, NDRI being the National Development and Research Institutes. We specifically have the Institute for Community-Based Research, and we are very, very interested in what's happening in the South. There are some unique problems that are happening in the South that impact populations that we need to look at. One of the things that Dr. Lanier mentioned earlier, he was talking about what's happening in the hood in Virginia, in a large metropolitan area. One of the things that he had mentioned was the interactions in terms of primary care, lack of access. That's something that we have definitely going on in the rural South because there is no transportation. Some of what Dr. Kondaki, some of what she talked about were issues of sexual abuse, and so some of those issues are going to come out as I'm talking about this population of multi-problem youth. Now, I've been talking for a little while. I asked y'all if y'all knew who multi-problem youth were. Most of you said you didn't. I'm going to now explain who they are, okay? I think I'm going to explain. Oh, okay. It's the other side of the clip. Okay, I'm going to give you some subgroups that are part of this population and kind of give you some information in terms of how this population is at risk and hopefully give you some strategies for working with this particular population. Who are multi-problem youth? Well, John is an example of a multi-problem youth. John currently lives in therapeutic foster care. He has a history of running away. He is currently on the run. His father is incarcerated, and his mother resides in a therapeutic community. What populations do you then see as I'm describing John? You see a person that's involved in the foster care system. That's a vulnerable population that we have. You see a person who is a runaway. Vulnerable population, you got an adolescent out there taking care of him or herself. You have a population that we're not really doing a lot of talking about these days, but the numbers are growing. We're talking about children of incarcerated parents, okay? And we're seeing more and more and more of those. And then finally, we're talking about the child of a person whose mother is in the therapeutic community. Now, when I'm saying therapeutic community, do you think that she's going for rehabilitation from her cardiac arrest? No, what do you think I'm talking about? Drug abuse. Okay, so here we have a representative of who I'm talking about is a multi-problem youth. But you know what happens typically is that we dissect the pieces. We look at foster care and we put John in that little cubbyhole of foster care without looking at the fact that John or perhaps some of John's siblings are also the runaways. They've got the incarcerated parent, and they've got the addicted parent as well. We've got them in these little cubby holes, all of which these cubby holes have these policies, these laws that are completely separate, and we don't look at John holistically so that we can provide John with the services that John needs. Okay? Now, one of the reasons that we're looking at this particular population of multi-problem youth is we're missing the boat with the way that we're currently doing things. And if we don't spend some time kind of developing a framework for even seeing who these youth are, then we're getting nowhere. And typically what we're finding is everybody, that this child is segmented into these pieces, and we don't look at the overlaps. All of these factors that are listed here put John at high risk for, what's one of the major issues that we have for our adolescents now that are coming up in terms of public health? I'm sorry? Incarceration, yes. Suicide, yes. I hadn't thought of those two. I was thinking of basic little things like teen pregnancy, HIV, things of those sort. All of those issues that we need to start looking at, because these youth are the highest risk youth out there. Okay, so let me give you some more information about these youth. What you're going to find is, as I said earlier, a lot of them are homeless. A lot of them are in out-of-home care. When I looked at homeless populations, 39% of people that are homeless are under the age of 18. 42% of those are under the age of 5 years old. Out of home children in out of home care, meaning that they are not living with their biological parents. They're probably in a group home. They're probably in some other kind of residential institution. Over 518,000 are in those particular situations. Children that are impacted by some type of substance use disorder, it's 1 in 4, okay? Incarceration, the numbers are growing. Now, we typically, when we talk about incarceration, we typically talk about dad being incarcerated. There are some major issues that are now happening. Moms are increasing in terms of incarceration, especially with our war on drugs. And what we find is that what happens to the children of the incarcerated parents? They end up in out-of-home care. Yes, they could end up, as Dr. Jill was sharing with me, behind, y'all couldn't hear that side conversation, huh? But Jill had just mentioned that perhaps they were with grandparents. Well, what we're finding is that there are issues that are going on in terms of the mental health issues that these youth are experiencing, that sometimes they disrupt the family system, so they may not be with grandma or aunt or cousin or whomever. Okay, so all of these things are primary issues that we need to look at. In terms of the numbers that I have, 58% of 58%, almost 60% of women that are in federal prisons have children under the age of 18. 45% of women in state facilities have children under 18. So that means that a lot of these kids are going into some kind of system. Okay? A lot of these mothers are into these systems because of substance abuse, as well as a relationship with someone who else, a male person that may also be involved in substance abuse. Okay. I came into the public health arena originally as a health educator. I came into the arena because I thought that by my going out into the field and sharing information that I might be able to make a change. But what we're basically finding is that the information that we have in terms of a lot of these high-risk behaviors, the youth already have that information. How many of you, some of y'all look a little young, but if I look out into the audience, I'm going to assume that we've all heard for at least the last 10 years the message as it relates to HIV. Is that correct? Is that a fair assumption? Do you think the youth have it? They've seen the buttons. They've seen the PSAs that we have. They've gone to the health conferences. All of that is there. However, the numbers are going up, correct? The youth have heard the messages as it relates to substances. But tobacco use is still an issue for us. Alcohol use, underage alcohol use, is still an issue for us. And youth are coming up with new and creative ways of using mood-altering substances. So the information is there, but what we're seeing is that that's not enough. So we need to look at some other kinds of things. Changing knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors, knowledge, attitudes, and skills is just not enough. And so we need to look at some other things that we need to do to work with the youth that we're dealing with, especially multi-problem youth. One of the problems that we're having, particularly in the South, is that we don't have adolescent-specific services. In the communities in which you all live, do you find that there are a lot of adolescent services that are available to you? Okay, I'm seeing people basically say, no, those are not in existence. That's some of what we need to do in order to be able to engage these youth, because we're not engaging them in ways that they are typically engaged. We're engaging them from the perspective of an adult. We need to look at their basic needs. We need to do more interagency case management and collaboration, more outreach into the community, peer education and training, and work on some referral systems that involve youth. All of the things that we're looking at in the rural South, we're finding in terms of the programming that we currently have in existence, that none of these features are there. And so we're dealing with a population where in the Bible Belt, I think I shared with you 9 states, correct, that I was talking about in terms of the rural South, North Carolina being where we're looking at our body of information. As we've looked at those other states, we found that in terms of sharing information and services, that everything is abstinence-based, as if these youth are not having sex, that puts them at risk for teen pregnancy, that puts them at risk for HIV and other STDs. We're looking at all of these kinds of things, but nothing is there to actually deal with the realities. In all of those states, the numbers are high for everything that I just mentioned. Here is basically what we have here as we're looking at the study that we're doing in North Carolina. We are looking at information that we have that's coming in from a system that we collect data called NCTOPS. We're collecting information about the mental health and the substance use patterns of the youth in our state. What we're finding is that we've got a significant need that is not being addressed. And so We're looking at what is happening within our macro system that is making that a problem for us. Our political structure in our area, we see on the one hand that there is a need for these services. However, nothing has really happened to be able to put those things in place. In North Carolina, we're currently going through a system of reform where we have basically taken apart our mental health structure, and we're putting it back together creatively, as most of our practitioners feel. We have 16 adolescent substance abuse programs in our state, but what we're finding is that we've got more than 57,000 youth that are reporting that they need services and that they're not getting them. And the same type of thing is true in terms of our school systems. The multi-problem youth that I showed you earlier, what we're finding is that within our school systems and our communities, what we're finding is that a number of our youth, these youth that I've identified to you, with John being the example of the multi-problem youth, is that they're being expelled from school. When they get expelled from school, they have some extra time on their hands. With the extra time on their hands, what they're doing is that they're engaging in these other practices that put them at higher risk, and no one is really looking at these particular issues. All of these things go hand in hand. However, it seems that nobody is talking about it. You know, so we're talking here today about what can we look at in terms of political systems and public policy and moving forward. And what our research is showing is that we need to bring the people to the table, because here we have a systems model of the systems that are impacting our youth, and nobody in the micro system is talking to the exosystem, which is talking to the macro system. And we need to have some kind of communication amongst them. One of the things that we are finding in particular in our state is that the macro and the exosystem seem to think that they have all of the information. And as we're talking to the youth and their families, whatever families exist for them, what we're finding is that they've got a whole series of issues that are going on that are not being addressed because no one did the first thing, which was to actually come to them and speak to them to find out what is going on. So what I'm presenting to you here is that we basically need to look at our systems and kind of figure out what we need to do. I've been given a wrap-up. Okay, she's giving me 5. Okay, thank you. Okay, so the factors that are influencing risk, looking at the system, we've got a significant amount of poverty, especially in the rural South. There are no activities, for the most part, for youth to engage in, and when they do have activities to engage in, they can't get to them because there is no transportation. So we need to look at creative means of trying to put those things into place. In terms of the ecosystem, the level and type of community criminal activity, that's one of the things that we have begun to address in our state. We're kind of disenfranchised with that. We've got a number of people that are coming back from the criminal justice system back into the community. What we typically are finding is that those people that are coming back into the community, because of the politics of the criminal justice system, that they have no relationship with the children that they left behind. The women who have gone off to prison, they may be able to write their children, but you know, there could be some level of hostility between the child and the parent. There are often no opportunities for visitation because nowadays people are kind of put wherever it is that you can put them. So there's not a lot of opportunity for them to engage one another and to build actual relationships. One of the things that we're beginning to do is to look at trying to reintegrate that and to try to build better systems so that we can start having more interaction. And that's some of what we found during our focus groups, where we were actually going back and talking to the young people and their families to kind of find out what their needs were. And that basically builds along with what I was talking about here in terms of the micro system. There is the parental substance abuse, there's the parental incarceration. Because of that, we don't have supervision, we don't have a lot of different things that we need to be able to help youth to engage the systems that exist to be healthier and to make better choices. This is basically talking about factors that influence risks from the individual perspective. As Dr. Kondaki had mentioned earlier, a lot of these issues are the same, as she mentioned, in terms of some of the abuse that goes on that puts our youth into these systems, behavioral problems that come as a result of it, and having issues in terms of actually being able to use behavioral and cognitive skills. Some of the lessons that we are learning as a result of working with these youth, as I mentioned earlier, is that there's a need for us to work collaboratively. These are the basic systems that we are working with in terms of our work. And we're trying to do more systems of care work. Are most of you familiar with the systems of care? Okay. And that also involves more case management work and making systems changes overall in terms of working with our youth and their families and changing the community norms that are obstacles for working with these youth. So I thank you for your time. Thank you.
Once again, I'd like to thank all of our panelists for their presentations. This was session 3305, sponsored by the Black Caucus. Just like to make a couple of announcements. Encourage you to visit our booth 241 for information on the Black Caucus. We are the premier and oldest caucus within APHA. We will be celebrating actually our 40th year next year in San Diego, so we look forward to seeing you next year as well. One of the highlight sessions that we also will be sponsoring will be taking place tomorrow at 12:30 to 2. It's a late breaker session at the Grand Hyatt Hotel Independence F&G. It's Eliminating Health Disparities by Preventing Chronic Diseases. We have a fantastic panel of presenters from Chicago. The session will be moderated by Terry Mason, who's the commissioner of the Chicago Department of Public Health. We have panelists Stephen Martin from the Cook County Department of Health, as well as Damon Arnold, the director of the Illinois Department of Health. So please join us tomorrow for that session. Also, our Poindexter dinner will be held tomorrow at 7:30 here in the Grand Hyatt. Tickets are going fast. Our keynote speaker will be Dr. Bill Jenkins, but we are honoring our annual Poindexter Award winner this year is Dr. David Satcher. So you can purchase tickets at the on-site registration tables in the convention center. Like I said, tickets are going fast. And now we'll entertain questions for our panelists. Questions? Well, that was one of the questions I wanted to pose to the panel is, can you give us, I guess, some tangible steps that we could do as we go back to our own states and jurisdictions? Like, how can we be actively involved to move forward on some of these things? And you mentioned you covered some of yours in your presentation about on the macro and micro levels what's needed. But I guess maybe one or two concrete things that we can physically go back and actually do.